This episode is a two-part episode. If you enjoyed part one, please come back next week, Wednesday morning, for part two.
And they kind of have all the units, you know, spread out. And they point to this big area that's, there's nobody in it yet, and it's red. And they're like, that's where we're going. And I'm like, of course we are.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. Today, we have Shane Manny, founder of Five Stones Fight Club. Shane, welcome to episode 78 of the American Grown Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
So a little bit of backstory on how I heard about you and Five Stones. So originally, I heard about Five Stones through a good family friend. Shout out to Big T. His family owns the Allen Theater, right across the street. What I thought. Okay. That's where I first heard about Five Stones. Tyler was taking some classes there. I don't remember exactly what.
He does jiu-jitsu. He gets after it, dude.
Oh, you know, so you're familiar?
Yeah, I know Tyler.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I wasn't sure. I mean, I imagine there's a lot of students there, a lot of people there that you might not know them all, but...
We try to get to know our people pretty good. I mean, with being a ministry, we try to make those personal connections. But Tyler, man, like he goes hard.
Tyler's awesome. And like I said, good family, friends. It really wasn't until... Mitch Davis came on, and he was on back at episode 66. And after the recording, you know, we got talking, and I said to Mitch, I said, you remind me of a guy big on social media named Tim Kennedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, his hair, just the way he acts, his mannerisms, the mustache. I think Tim used to have one. And for those that don't know, Tim Kennedy, New York Times bestseller, Green Beret sniper, is a UFC fighter, just all out American, you know, and, Mitch laughs. You're not going to believe this, but I know a guy that knows Tim or served with him or has some connection. So next thing you know, boom, he calls you up, Shane, and here we are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I never met Tim. I talked to him through email once or twice, and then I know people that know him. He had Sheepdog Response is the organization that he runs, and we had their group in at our gym.
Oh, wow.
So they ran some Protector One courses, and they did... some different stuff on the range up at the police range up in Lebanon. So, so they were just using like our gym as like the home base for that.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's how the connection was made.
It's a small world. It's that theory. What is it? 6 degrees of separation or whatever it is. And for the listeners, you know, it's 6 people or less, you can be connected to anyone in the world.
Right.
You know, and
it's just crazy.
It is crazy to
think
about.
But it's 9 times out of 10, it's true.
It's true. Yeah. So, you know, to say all that, you know, I'm glad you're here. I'm excited to get to hear your story, get to share it, you know, and get to learn about who is Shane Manny.
Cool.
Before we do, let's take a quick sip break.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your early childhood like, and where were you born and raised?
Yeah, so I'm from Shamokin, Pennsylvania.
Okay, up north.
So, yeah, about an hour or so north of here. And I had a great childhood. You know, I grew up running around the coal hills as a kid and, you know, shooting stuff and, you know, building fires, cooking meat out in the woods. And that's kind of how I grew up. But one of my favorite stories to tell is, you know, so all through history, like, you can see how men affect the culture, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I had a solid group of men growing up that, you know, poured into me. The first one, obviously, was my dad. So my dad was a godly man, still is. I mean, like, he's still around.
Okay, know,
still
good, kicking. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, just a hard dude. Quiet, super humble. Like, you wouldn't know what he's done unless, like, you had a conversation. He wouldn't tell you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have to pry it out of him even still today.
Right.
But I remember, like, one of my favorite life lessons and first time when I was like, man, this is how men need to understand the gospel, right? The gospel of Jesus. So when I was a kid, my dad would go run. He was in the Marine Corps. He did 23 years in the Marines. So he's been – so obviously I was brainwashed as a child. I had no choice. I'm joining the Marine Corps.
Yeah. That's where you're
I
going.
Exactly. I ran around in camis and whatever. But we lived in town, and he would run across town and run up this mountain. And it was the second largest man-made mountain in the world. It's called the Glen Burn.
Oh, wow.
So it was all coal, all stuff that's undermined. You know, they
like just, the leftovers and stuff. They just pile it up.
And he would run across town and run up this, you know, a couple switchbacks. And there was a line that, like, you could see kind of the edge of where this road went. And it went the entire length of the town. Like, it was, like, he would go for hours.
Yeah.
And so, but I would go and I'd play a little bit and I'd come back and I'd stand on the edge of our wall. And I could see the mountain from, you know, from the wall there. And I'd watch.
And you see your dad
running. I'd wait to see if I could see him. I'd go play a little bit and I'd come back and I'd watch again. So I was always looking, you know. And then one day, you know, he's getting ready to go and he's like, "Hey, grab your bike." I'm like, "Okay." Just take my bike, you know, we go pedal. And so, of course, up the switchbacks, I'm not pedaling a thing, I'm pushing it.
Right.
You know, I get up and I would hit the puddles and he would just go run. He'd just run out and he'd run back. He'd run out and run back and run out and run back, you know, and I'd just keep pedaling and I'd, you know, mess around the puddles. And one day, I was probably like 10. And he was like, "Hey, time to go for a run." I'm like, "All right." I went to get my bike and he goes, "Hey, you don't need that." And I'm like, "I don't need that." He goes, "Nope, time to be a man." Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
At 10, yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So I'm like, this will be interesting, you know. So we run across town, nice slow pace. We get to the bottom of the hill, start up the hill, and we're about 3/4 way up the switchback. And he stops and he says to me, he says, "Hey, find a buddy." A buddy. I'm like,
"Where?"
It's only me and you on the mountain.
Yeah, Dad, what are you know? Talking about?
And
yeah.
He walks over and he picks up a rock the size of a football.
Oh, shit.
And he's like, "Yeah." He's like,
"That's the buddy?"
"That's the buddy." He's like, "Find a buddy."
Okay.
And I'm like, "Oh, man." So, of course, I try to pick up a swing. He goes, No. He goes, "Get one about this size."
Oh, like, he wasn't going to let you like.
No, he wouldn't let me scam out. Yeah. Not at all. So I find one like comparable in size to me as is to him. And he goes, "All right, here's the deal. Carry the rock. Stay on the path. Don't stop running. I'll be back. You're not going to see me. I'm going to disappear. I'm going to go down the road.
Yeah.
Stay on the path. Don't stop running. I'll be back. You got it?" I'm like, "Yeah. Yeah, I got it." He goes, "Okay. Here we go." Of course, I tried to keep up. He's gone. He takes off.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Man, carry the rock. Stay on the path. Don't stop running. I'll be back." So here's me. I've been on that mountain 100 times at this point, you know?
Yeah.
But like, here's 10-year-old me. And I'm like, man, I felt like the first time on that mountain, I felt like scared and alone. It was weird. You know, I'm like, and all I could hear was my heartbeat and the pitter-patter of my feet, you know?
Right.
And the chuk-chuk-chuk on the dirt. And I get to the top, and there's a big, long stretch. And I've been there 100 times.
Yeah.
And so here he comes back, and before he gets to me, he's like, "Hey," he goes, "carry the rock, stay in the path." He goes around me, and he's like, "Don't stop running, I'll be back." And he takes off and goes again.
Jeez.
So I had no idea how long we're going to run for. Like, this could go on for hours, like, because it has, you know?
Right.
So this went on for years like this. Where we would do this, and finally got to the point to where, you know, and like he would do this, like he would do this lap.
So until come back and loop
around. Come back, loop around, and take off again. Come back and take off again.
Yeah,
you know, and it's middle of summer. I mean, like, it's hot. Whew. Yeah, dude. I guess he's a machine. He was.
How old was your dad around this time then?
He's probably in his 30s, 40s.
Oh, so prime. Prime shape. Okay. Yeah.
Because he's 60 something. No, he's 70 now. So, yeah.
He's probably still doing
but
it.
But he's still, he could.
He yeah. could, I bet.
He, yeah. He's.
And
yeah.
I just met you the first time. I bet he still could.
Yeah, he's that. Just, that's who he is.
So he's just going and you carrying this rock at 10 years. Yeah, keep going with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. So finally, I get to the point where I can kind of keep up with him.
Right.
And so we're trucking along and we talk a little bit as we run, you know, but for the most part, just in silence, you know. And we're going and all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, "Man, carry the rock, stay in the path, don't stop running, I'll be back." And I came to a stop, and he takes like 3 seconds, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Dad," I'm like, "carry the rock, stay in the path, don't stop running, I'll be back." And he goes, "Yeah." And I'm like, that's the gospel. Carry the rock, you know, for us we say carry the cross, right?
Yeah.
Stay on the path, you know, follow what scripture says. Don't stop running, go hard after it,
yeah.
I'll be back, Jesus returning, right? And he just kind of chuckled. He's like, "It's about time." He throws the rock away. He goes, "You can put that away. Come on, let's go
no
run."
Way.
Yeah. So I was like, "Holy smoke. Like, how long are we going to do this?" You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, "Until you got it." I'm like, "Dude, wow. That's amazing." But it was like that. That's how my life lessons were built, was like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my dad started the first fight I was ever in our backyard. Yeah, I was in kindergarten. Ridiculous. My mom's crying. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well,
so
what happened? Was it a birthday party or what?
No, I was out back playing with three kids. It turned into three against me.
Oh.
I was always a little guy. I'm always the smallest guy, you know.
I won't mess with you.
And
I won't mess with you.
Well, I had to learn,
yeah.
Right? So, I wrestled since I was five, so like it didn't bother me really. You know, I mean, I was probably 5 or 6 at the time, so I'd wrestled already, and like we just you know, I was getting whooped on, I didn't know. And
well, 3-on-1's not fair. No matter how good of a wrestler you are,
correct. My dad comes out and he's like, hey, and he's like, hold up, you want to fight him? That's fine, no problem. Just fight him one at a time. And he goes, come here, Shane, give me your glasses, because I wore glasses, you know.
Okay.
And so I give him my glasses, and he goes, pick one. I'm like, all right. So I pick one kid. He's like, He goes home. And next one, he's like, And the third kid's like, okay. So I walk over. He punches me square in the face. Boom. Right. My head whips back. And I look at my dad. He's like, well, you better do something. So I'm like, you know, I mean, like, they're little me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we go at it. We go round and round, blow for blow a couple of times. My mom's like, stop.
You know, I bet.
You know,
she's
losing her mind.
That's mom. Yeah.
And both of us are crying. You know, nobody's bleeding or anything like that. You know, but after a couple of punches, you know, good one, my dad's like, all right, you're done. And so he's like, shake hands. He's like, sends a kid home. He's like, listen, he goes, go home, tell your parents, because if they got a problem, come on down, we'll chat. So, and that was it. So he grabs a hold of me. I'm crying, right, this time. My dad grabs hold of me by the shirt. He pulls me close and he says, why are you crying, boy? And I said, well, I got punched in the face. And he goes, does it still hurt? I'm like, no. He goes, well, stop crying. And I was like, oh. So that, like, that's how my whole childhood was, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he just kind of, you know, scuffed my head.
That was the tempo. That's the tone.
The tone of everything. Wow. Yeah. So that's how I grew up, like that kind of stuff, you know? I mean, you know, and my dad, even now, I mean, like, I'd say my dad's probably one of my best friends, you know, now. Like, he's helping build the gym. We're opening a second gym in Shamokin.
Really?
So, yeah. So, he's up there. Every time I go up, though, he's working out. So, I'm like, are you building or are you working?
That's
you
know great. I mean? Yeah. He's 70 years old. So, he's getting after
absolutely.
It. That's awesome.
Yeah, just yesterday, I was up. Me and my daughter went up, and we're up yesterday. We walk in. He's on a bike.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
So, where's, like, your second location
going to be? So, if you go up 81 North, and you get off the Minersville exit.
Okay.
Bang a left and head toward it. There's actually signs for Shamokin. It'll take you in on Route 61 eventually. You'll bump in Route 61. And then it's called Clark's Feed Mill. And they're building a new mill. And so they have a section of it that was, it used to be a Fastenal. So big, like, department store. And so there's a whole other story behind that one, man. We were looking for a spot originally to try to get into Shamokin. Because, like, ever since I grew up, man, it's a whole different place now.
Yeah.
Than what it was then, right? I mean, there was drugs and stuff when I was a kid, but it's gotten
worse.
Really bad, yeah.
Sounds like most of America, sadly.
Unfortunately, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, my dad had a building, and he's like, what about this? I'm like, it's too small, man. Like, and he's like, yeah, you're right. But we can start here at least. So we start ripping stuff apart. Now, the buildings there, they're super old, right? I mean, it's an old coal town. Yeah. And so we start ripping stuff apart. We find out some of these main support beams are busted. So we're like, man, Dad, like, we got to fix that first of all. You know what I mean?
Right.
But like, we ain't putting weights up here. So I'm driving down the road, and I'm praying. Like, I'm praying out loud. Like, I'm talking to you right now. I'm like, Lord, I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I feel like I'm supposed to be here. Like,
yeah,
I'm,
for guidance. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A sign, something.
Yeah, something. Like, yeah, and I'm driving. I'm like, I see this place, and I know it's empty. And I can tell it's empty. And I pull in. I'm like, well, who owns this? I'm thinking, like, so I'm like, I'm like, Lord, if this is a place that, like, then Lord, you're gonna have to make it happen. I'm like, cause this is a pretty cool place. It's right on Route 61, lots of parking. Yeah. I mean, just really good spots just outside of town. And so I call my cousin, and he's like, yeah, actually I know the person that owns it. So he sets up a meeting. They had already had it rented come this last January. Okay. And for $3,000 a month is what they were paying, is what they're gonna charge for rent. I'm like, I can't, that's expensive for me. I can't.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, what do you want to do with it? And so, like, when we get into the story about Five Stones, like, I'm like, dude, there's so much behind this.
Yeah.
But so I lay out everything with Five Stones that we do. And she just kind of nods her head for a couple seconds, and she's like, you know what? I don't need to make any money. How can you cut my cost? And so I'm like, wow.
Yeah, really?
And, and I'm like, how many employees you got? She goes, I got 24. Okay. So how about we give them all free memberships? You can write that off as like an insurance thing. You know what I mean? We can kind of add that to your, you know, perks or whatever. And she's like, okay, what else? And I said, how about we pay taxes and utilities? And she's like, done. And I'm like, holy smokes. Yeah. So for $400 a month, we have this, and it's massive.
Yeah.
But the thing is what she said, well, listen, she's like, we're building a new mill right down the road. So this whole thing is going to be empty. We're in about a third of it right now.
Okay.
And it's huge. It's massive. I don't even know square footage, but it's a, well, I know the first section we're in right now, total, just where we have just our weight room, yeah, is 100 by 50.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's another on the other side, 50 by probably 50 by 50 that we'll probably do for a mat room. And okay, then there's a whole other like L shape section with another place for like powerlifting eventually. And then our whole fight side we want to do. So it's huge.
Jeez. Yeah.
And that's probably in total, that's about three times the size of where we're at right now.
Really?
Yeah, it's massive.
Wow.
And so, but then that's not including the mill side, which, yeah, so that's coming too. Yeah. So I'm like, this is insane. They're like, yeah, as we move out, you just move in. I'm like,
that's a great deal.
Great deal. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this is kind of the way that I've seen God move, you know, through my entire life like this. But so, anyways, so we get in. She does that $400 a month. She's like, we're ready to roll.
Yeah.
So, but my dad, though, he's been there hammering away. You know, he's like, it's given him like a new drive because he's like, dude, yeah, I get to work yeah out. Like, you know,
like almost a new purpose in life.
Absolutely.
You know? Now, what would you say? And I've been kind of waiting to ask somebody this question. I feel like you're the right person.
Yeah.
Maybe, and I'm sure if your dad was here, he'd be a great person to ask. What do you think makes someone a leader of men?
Well, I think they have to have the right identity. So we talk about five things, and I think this is key. Mm-hmm. And I say identity, right? We talk about identity, purpose, calling, training, and being on mission. If you have those five things, I'll slow that down. Identity,
purpose,
calling,
training,
and being on mission.
Being on mission, okay.
So if you have those five things that you hit in your lifetime as a man, I think that will plug you into a place where you're able to affect the lives of others that are around you, right? So, I mean, you talk about personality types and all these different things, and I think that matters a little bit.
Yeah.
But in the same sense, like it's not all that. Like, that's part of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think life experience, I think the way you were raised makes a big difference. I think the way you build relationships makes a big difference. And so, and you kind of latch on to those people who you've learned from, and you kind of follow their example. And so things that made a difference to me, you know, or my dad, like, that's kind of how they led. And so I think the biggest thing, though, is that identity is not knowing what the world says a man is or what the world says a leader is, but what does God say about these things? Because really, society changes all the time, but the Word of God doesn't. And so here we are trying to figure out, you know, I mean, the world's crazy right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're in the middle of an identity crisis as a world.
It's wild.
It's nuts.
It is. Yeah, it really is.
We can't answer simple questions even anymore, you know, but so Scripture lays it out pretty simple. I mean, the fact that we're created in the image of Almighty God, in that alone, you have intrinsic value. You mean something. You're worth something. And so does everybody else that walks this place of the earth. So that alone is like, should be like, wow, like, that's pretty cool, yeah, right? So, but purpose, this is one thing that I think we miss. If a man lacks purpose, he will fill that void with pleasure. And eventually, that pleasure will turn to pity because it won't fulfill the need anymore. And then eventually, it will kill him. And that's just something does that make sense?
It does. It makes perfect sense, you know.
Yeah.
It's just to think about it.
And so for us, and what I believe that Scripture lays out purpose as being, our purpose is to glorify God in everything that we do. So you're designed different, I'm designed different. We have different things that we do, not better than each other, just different, right? Yeah. And so like the way you impact, the way you worship God is how you live through those, your calling or your use of your talents, gifts, and abilities.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So God's designed you to do this, right? I mean, this is part of what God's designed you to do, which is wild,
yeah,
right?
It is. Think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you really step back and think about it.
And so with that, obviously, when you come into this stuff, there's a learning curve, so that's where your training comes from. But once you figure out, we talk about like an axe, right? Like, okay, if you think about an axe, you ever cut a tree down with a dull axe?
Well, it's not that fun.
It's not fun. It doesn't work that well. It's not. Yeah. No, it's frustrating for everybody, right? You get mad at the axe, you know, whatever. Yeah. I mean, you're yelling all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But so, if this is gonna sound a little weird, but like if the axe had feelings, right?
Okay.
So it would have the nicks and burrs and stuff that's in it that's making it dull.
Yeah.
You would take a rasp to that, right, and grind that down.
Sharpen it.
Exactly. Yeah. Those pieces would splinter off. And if it had feelings, it would be like, man, that really hurts.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's losing a piece of itself.
Right.
But in the end, the final product of that grinding down, of that sharpening of the iron, if you will, the iron sharpening iron that Scripture talks about.
I was just going to say that quote, iron sharpens iron. Yeah.
So the Scripture talks about that. It brings it to a fine point that in the right hands, you put that your life in the hand of the maker, the one that's designed it. It's effective and efficient at what it's called, what it's designed to do. That's our life. Wow. And so I think that's what makes a good leader is understanding those five things, because once he's effective and efficient, then he can be on mission. And he knows exactly what he's called to do, and he does it the way he's supposed to do it.
And he executes.
And he executes. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hold on, I got to take a sip break.
Yeah, yeah.
Shane, you're blowing my mind. No, no, really. It's phenomenal. Holy cow. We have that quote up in the shop, iron sharpens iron. To get back to, you know, early childhood and, and growing up, because I did see that you got a bachelor's degree in biblical studies at Lancaster Bible College, but that was back in 2016. So obviously that's a little bit more more recent. So like take us through, you know, again, early childhood and up to, you know, 2016 and then we kind of go from there. But
So, you know, at high school, you know, junior high school, all through childhood, I played sports. You know, I wrestled, played football, ran track. I was a nose guard. I played D-line.
Okay.
And I mean, I was only five nothing, 100 and nothing.
You got after it though.
But I was fast enough to shoot the gap, so I didn't get pounded by the big guys.
Right,
I could cause chaos. You know, so that was kind of where that went. So I kind of probably like, oh, the little man complex. Yeah, probably a little bit. You know.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, But so all through that, I mean, that was kind of what my life revolved around, you know, as a kid, was athletics.
Okay.
And so a lot of my friends were simply just, they were just in every, we all played football together. We all wrestled together. We ran track together. In the summer, we'd go fishing and camping together. Like, we had a solid group of guys. And I would say, I can't think of one guy out of the group that didn't join the military after that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. I feel like that says a lot about that Cole region area just in general, you know.
Just tough people.
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure. Right. That's how I pictured it, you know, just a bunch of tough, badass motherfuckers that get after it, you know, and that you don't, you know, you set your mind to it, you do it. And, you know, you don't take no for an answer no matter what it is. So, wow. So all those guys went into service at some point. Yeah.
And the majority, I think of like my buddy Nate, he was in the Marine Corps as well. Him and I were on base the same time, different units, you know, so I got to see him every once in a while. We would hang out.
Cool. Yeah.
Same thing with my buddy Jared, same thing. They deployed to Afghanistan. Nate was all over the place. He was like the Horn of Africa, and he was like with the MEB, so the Marine Corps. Yeah, he was everywhere. And I still hang out with these guys today. It's still kind of like, my buddy Chris was in the Army. Josh was in the Navy. He was a Navy corpsman. He'd been blown up in Afghanistan or in Iraq, one of them. And I mean, like, survived.
An IED? Or?
I believe it was an IED, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Wow. But, so there's a couple. My buddy Nate lost hearing in his whole left side. Like, he's got, like, the bionic head implant thing, you know, because, RPG, you know,
took that
from him. So, yeah.
What's the, I don't know if it's a joke, and I can cut this out if I'm wrong. But
no, go for it.
Isn't there something in the service like, you know, oh, that didn't happen. You didn't lose your hearing from the
service. Yeah, it's not service connected.
Yeah, it's not service connected. Yeah, it's like, really?
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen like memes or things about that. Wow.
So, it's been wild to see, you know, I mean, like from time growing up, you know, running around shooting each other BB guns, you know, to seeing each of us go off different, you know, and fighting different conflicts around the world. So it was pretty wild.
Yeah. So, and from a young age, you know, with your father being the Marines, that was... You're dead set. You're going to the Marines.
I know it's gonna be. Yeah, I don't think I had any other clothes other than camouflage when I was a kid.
I believe it. So after high school, that was always the plan.
That was always. Right? I didn't have. Yeah, my that was my plan. I mean, like my mom always wanted me to go to college and get a degree, and so I was like, well, okay, what I'll do, I'll go be a Marine reservist. I'll get my college degree, and then I can go active duty.
Yeah,
you know, and I was like that. Then I'll have. Satisfied everybody.
Everybody's
you know
happy. I mean?
Everybody's happy, and I can do my thing. Well, so that didn't happen, but I'm not right away. So I ended up. I started off as a reservist, and after September 11th, we got activated twice in a row. So our unit was actually the reason why they made the law that like you can't activate units for a certain amount of time because guys lost businesses. Guys that were reservists had full time businesses. You know, so they would deploy for a year. Come back. We came back for like a month and got deployed
have to go
again.
Right away.
Yeah.
Holy
and we're like,
shit.
Well, how's that work? You
right,
know, you
right.
can't tell me there's no more guys out here. Like, I mean, like, really? You know, so, so it was pretty.
So 9/11, how did that impact you? I mean, heck, when it happened, I was third grade, yeah. I believe. So, I mean, yeah, just a kid. And you know, they didn't show us at school. I think we even got out early. And, yeah. You know, you didn't really realize the impact. But now I'm thinking, like, you know, I have two under two we were just talking about. You know, knock on wood, hopefully they never have to live through anything like that. But right. They won't understand, you know, what happened and how we move forward from it. So, like, what do you remember? Where were you? What was that like?
Yeah, so heard? At the time, like I said, I was in the reserves.
Okay.
So I was working full-time at Northwestern Human Services and going to school full-time. And so, like, I was coming home. I worked a night shift, actually, that night. And I just got home. I just laid down, and I get a phone call. And my dad's like, yo, turn the TV on. We're under attack. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. He goes, a plane just flew into the building in New York. I think it's a terrorist attack. So I'm like, no way. So I turn the TV on, you know. And as I'm standing there, the second one hits. Boom. And I'm like, holy smokes. And dad's like, well, boy, pack your stuff. We're probably going somewhere. And so I was like, all right. And then within like hours, I had phone calls from our section leader. And he's like, hey, dude, pack your stuff. I don't know where we're going. We're going somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Roger that. So so that was a huge game changer, you know, for me. And then, you know, at the time, I think it was 23, somewhere in there. And I was, you know, just trying to figure life out still.
Yeah,
you
right.
know? And I had at the time, I was a corporal in the Marine Corps at the time. So, like, you know, you're making phone calls and, you know, checking on your guys, like, hey, you know, get ready. Here's what we got. You know, I don't have any intel, but this is what, you know, Sergeant Z is telling us. We're get ready to roll.
Yeah.
So within a couple of days, they're like, hey, come down to unit, check in. And, all happened so quick.
So quickly. Yeah.
And then, within, I think we were down in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina within like, so that September 11th happened by January. We were living in Camp Lejeune. So our first thought was, dude, we're going to Afghanistan. Like, that's what we thought. We're going to Afghanistan. Cause at that time, I mean, you already had people talking, you know, I mean, everything was going. So we're like, all right, yeah, we're going to be part of this initial push, right? So we ended up just, they kept us on active duty for an entire year. And all we did was train. Like, we were all over the place. We were at NTC in California doing desert warfare. We were doing mountain training at Bridgeport, California. We were all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was all over the place. It was great.
Simulate the environment that you...
We had no idea where we were going. Yeah. So we're like, desert? We're like, oh, yeah, Afghanistan. Yeah. We're like, mountains? We're like, yeah, Afghanistan. You know? And then, so we're getting closer to December. We're like, dude, our contract's up here. Like, what's going on here? Like, we're not going anywhere. What's going on?
Right.
You know? And, I mean, it was wild. And then... as that started to wrap up, we had this big brief before we left, and they're like, gentlemen, you did a good job. And we're like, of course, everybody's like disappointed. We're like,
right, because
I just wasted a year.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? You're thinking you're going, so your mindset's like, let's go, let's do this.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, but the general that's addressing us then goes, now listen, we're going to deactivate you guys. It was in December, it was right before Christmas.
Okay.
And he's like, so, but don't unpack your stuff. And he said, because not everybody comes home for the next one. That's what he said to us. And everybody's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So we're like, all right. So I literally didn't unpack anything. I went home, and within the middle of January, we got a phone call. They're like, hey, we're cutting orders. You're going to Iraq. So I'm like, man, they let it. And we found out later that it was like, if they would have kept us on active duty for an extra couple days, they would have had to pay us different benefits.
Oh, so, Jesus.
Not service connected, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So right. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So
yeah, there it is, right?
There it is, there it
yeah.
is. Yeah. So anyways, I mean, whatever. They're trying to be frugal, whatever. You know, I'm sure they're really worried about how they spend my tax dollars.
Yeah,
but
right. Yeah.
But so we get activated in February. And so, you know, we all go down to Lejeune again. We're in Sigma Battalion, I think it was 2/8, Sigma Battalion 8th Marines. I think we're in their barracks there. It was either 2/8 or 2/6. I can't remember which. But so we know we're rolling. Like, we have the orders actually say,
okay,
you know, for flying to Kuwait. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, and it's cut for a year, you know, so we're like, yeah, this is going to be the real deal. So, so we're doing all kinds of stuff. We're getting gear and we're getting all kinds of different things and PTing like crazy and, you know, all that stuff. You know, just brushing up on the skills that we did, that we had basically just trained the entire year for.
Yeah.
So, which is great, because, I mean, I'm happy for that. You know what I mean? It was good.
Right.
So, because typically when they activate a reserve unit, it's not that way. it's usually reservists that come in, they train, and then they, you know, they might train for a month or two or 2 months, and they kick them out and they go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still a big learning curve there, right? Yeah. So for us, at least, we're actually acclimated to the, you know, full year of training, like with living as an active duty unit. So that was super helpful. So we get deployed, fly into Kuwait, and we're getting everything set up, and they're like, listen, gents, we're going to be here for 2 weeks, climatized to the weather. After that,
okay,
you know, we're going to kick off, and it's game time.
That was one of my questions I was going to ask real quick. I don't want to cut you off.
No, shoot.
But, you know, I was going to say, was the training that you did for that year, like in California, did that, because I've heard from other service members how hot and intense the heat is. I don't know. And the smells and things over there, it's so different than what, you know, we're used to here. So did your training, like in California, did it help at all to prepare for that kind of stuff?
I mean, it did. But, I mean, I don't think you're ever really ready for anything like that. You know what I mean? You think you are. And, you know, that's, you have to believe that you are in order to go do those things.
Right,
what
you got
to
do.
It was definitely helpful. I mean, you know, anytime you get behind a firearm, you can run and gun a little bit and, you know, shoot, move, and communicate. I mean, that's, you get better at it. So it's huge. Yeah.
Just putting hours in, repping, repetition.
Absolutely.
Just like anything. Just like, you know, sports. Yeah. Gotcha. So, you know, what was that like? You're over there 2 weeks to get acclimated.
So this is also one of the turning points in my life. This is the time, like we talked about, you know, carry the rock, stand a path, don't stop running, I'll be back, right?
Yep.
The idea of the gospel itself. Well, I mean, I'd grown up in a Christian home, you know, so like I'd been, you know, been to church and did all this stuff. And, you know, I've made a commitment to Christ as a young child, and I'd grown in my faith that way. But time to actually, my faith was actually really tested here, right? And so, I mean, this is the real deal. Like, you know, time to put your money where your mouth is, boy. You know what I mean? So, the cool thing was throughout that year, I had the opportunity to go to a chaplain's assistant school and all this kind of stuff. So, like, we didn't have any chaplains in southern Iraq at the time. None assigned to our unit. So, they're like, hey, man, you got services. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm a machine gunner. You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? I'm services. They're like, CO's like, I want a service on a Sunday morning. I'm like, roger that, sir. So, you know, so.
She's got to come up with it.
So I'm like, all right. So, you know, that's kind of, that's how we started. But, so it was kind of a cool thing to kind of, you know, get into that situation. But then, you know, we're getting ready to roll. And the 2 weeks, you know, and so 2 days later, we're, you know, messing around, doing whatever we're doing, sighting weapons and all that stuff. And they're like, hey, you know, team leads, section leads, there's a meeting, you know, you got to come down here to the head shed, and we're going to discuss some stuff. We're like, all right. So everybody kind of grabs their stuff, and, you know, we head off and walk into this big GP tent. And so we're sitting there, and the CL comes walking in, and everybody stands at attention. He's like, sit, you know, so everybody just kind of sits down, and we've got their little green notebook out, you know, their little green monster. And he stands in front of us, and he's got his hands on his hips, and he looks around, and he's like, gentlemen, it's now. We're launching the assault right now. And we're like, holy smokes. And he's like, so he goes, what's happened? Armor is headed north as we speak, you know, so they're going to be pushing in. He goes, tomorrow at noon, we'll be on birds, you know, gives us the rundown. 4 helicopters, 45-minute flight and a way in, 45-minute flight return. So the thing is there's like at least an hour and a half turnaround before reinforcements can arrive. And so there's a big map up, and he shows us where we're going, you know. And so he's like, we're putting heavy hitters on the ground first. He's like, machine guns, assault, and third platoon, you guys are going to be on the ground first. We're like, roger that. So, you know, we're kind of, you know, writing all the details we can get down. And he points to there's a big map, and it's kind of divided in four in quadrants. And it's got, you know, talks about 110, you know, 1st Battalion, 10th Marines, and how they didn't have their tube, their artillery. And he's like, they didn't have their tubes, they're acting as riflemen.
Wow.
I'm like, holy smokes, like, what in the world? Like, they just don't have, like, how does that work?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, every Marine's a rifleman, gent, you just gotta make it work. I'm like, roger that, you know, everybody, okay. You know, and so, and, you know, and like 2-8s, you know, banging away, and 1-7's over here, and, you know, they kind of have all the units, you know, spread out. And they point to this big area there's nobody in it yet, and it's red. And they're like, that's where we're going. And I'm like, of course we are. So
red's not good.
You know, red's not good.
And no one else is there. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, gents, like 32 Marines have died so far. You know, this is, so they're like, this is where we're going. I'm like, all right. And so the town's called Nasiriyah. We're going to land in the Ba'ath Party headquarters soccer field. So so like we're gonna land at Indian Town Gap on the soccer field.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the So I'm like, holy smokes. So I'm like, all right, well, this will be interesting. So they're going through everything, and they're like, that's when he told about the, you know, an hour and a half turnaround. They're like, you got to hold the LZ, this and that. And like, I'm like, holy smokes. Like, we're landing in the middle of their base. You know, that's what we're doing.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I'm like, oh, yeah. And they're like, you know, second LAR and, you know, and the Mew is going to, they're going to push forward. So they should hit the base the same time you guys land. So it's going to be, you know, coordinated assault, this and that. I'm like, all right, you know, so like, of course, now we're like, wow, like this is like the gravity of the situation's hitting us, right? We're packing up. We're getting everything ready to roll. and we have this prayer service and everything, and you know, and
what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, but
like, what do you say? You're the preacher, right?
Yeah, right. So basically, I just like, hey man, like I gather everybody. I'm like, listen, if we're gonna pray in the tent, if you guys want to come and pray, come pray. And so I think all but like two guys came in, and two guys that came, they came in, but they kind of hung out in the back. They were there, whatever. So and literally, like guys took turn praying, which was really cool. Some guy read Psalms 91. You know, like I mean. Yeah, it was just awesome. So, so next, you know, we're working through the night and we're getting everything ready. And so the next day we're ready to roll. We're getting in our sticks and they're handing out grenades and stuff. And at this point, mind you, like I said, I was in the Marine Corps. So the Marine Corps like does a lot with less. And it's always like a running joke. Like we get the Army's like non-serviceable magazines. You know what I mean? Just like that's what, you know, like there's no money in the Marine Corps, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and we kind of laugh about it, but I mean, it's pretty true. So we only had, at the time, we only had front plates, front sappy plates. We didn't have back plates. They didn't have enough. So, and so and we also had green mop gear suits. We didn't have any desert color.
Green.
Yeah.
So you got to stick out like a sore thumb.
Dude, if you look at history books, you can see them. It's ridiculous. So like, why are they in green? I'm like, because the Marine Corps didn't have any money.
Wow.
Yeah. So, So we're passing out stuff, and they're like, hey, we got frags coming. I'm like, all right. So, you know. I get enough pouches on my gear. I'm like, I'll hold, you know, between four and six frags, whatever we got. And so they're like, no, only take one. I'm like,
one?
Yeah. I'm like, only take one.
What are you talking about?
I'm like, I got a lot more room.
Yeah, right.
What do you mean only take one? Like, we don't have enough. I'm like, holy smokes. I'm like, all right. So I take a frag and pass it back down. I'm like, hey, only take one. You know, everybody's kind of like, what? Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. You know. Don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So go through that, and they're like, hey, gun team leaders, come here. So we go up, and they're like, we got a problem. I'm like, okay, what's the problem? They're like, we don't have any belt link ammo for the 240s. The 240 Gulf is what the machine guns.
And these are on the birds, on the helicopters?
No, these are ones we're a line company.
Oh.
So like, yeah, so there's a machine gunner, an A gunner, and a team leader, you know, and an ammo guy. So there's like, you know, four-man gun team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but wait a minute, what do you mean you don't have belt link ammo?
Throw rocks? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly. And so our guy had, you know, the 9mm ammo, whatever he had for his pistol.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what are we going to do? How's that going to work? Right. You know, we're supposed to be the first ones on the ground. We're supposed to hold this LZ. How's it supposed to work?
Yeah.
And they're like, gents, it'll meet you while you're there. And I'm like, yeah, because that makes sense.
What?
Yeah. Listen, and people are like, that's crazy. That would never happen.
Yeah.
You talk to any guy in the unit, he'll tell you this happened.
I believe it, but it's wild to think about. It's ridiculous. You know, you don't think about it back here in the States. You're just like, oh, our servicemen and women, they got everything they need.
They got everything.
You know?
Yeah, they take enough tax money. They got everything they need.
You know, they're getting taken care of. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great.
Holy cow.
We just kind of laugh. We're like, what?
Throw the gun and hit him with it?
Well, so I'm like, all right. So I call the guys together. I had two teams. I'm like, look, strap that thing as tight as you can. Strap it to your chest. Keep it tight. And I took one of my mag pouches off, and I gave it to one of the guns. And I'm like, listen, you stay with me. If I get hit, you have my rifle and whatever's left in those magazines. You know, I said, and the team leader did the same thing. I'm like, that's just what we're going to do. All right? Everybody's like, this is nuts. I'm like, yeah, you're right. It is nuts. So we got on the birds. We fly in, and you know, we're flying map at air. So like it's a section leader, me and the rest of the team. So I could see out the back. We were on the CH-53s, so they had the back ramp, you know, and there was 253s and 247s, so they had the, you know, the double blade and the single blade. So we're flying, you know, map at Earth and stuff, and you could, like, as soon as we cross over line of departure, you can see stuff burning, you know, I mean, we're like, yeah, here it is, you know, and you could see our armor still rolling north, you know, we still, like, you know, you could tell we were still pushing,
yeah,
you know, and so we're getting close, and you know, they give the 2-minute warning, and one of the birds opens up. You could hear, so we're like, okay, man. So like, here we go. Like, so everybody, you know, kind of adjusts their goggles and stuff, and everybody chambers around, and they call us off. They're like, you know, stand by. So they make a big loop, and we're like, all right, we're like, what's going on? You know what I mean? So we wait, we fly around a little bit, and then they give a 2-minute warning again. They're like, you know, here we go. This time we're going in. You know, so like, 2 minutes. Everybody else 2 minutes. You know, 30 seconds. We land. and run out the back, 360 to Bird's Leave. And it's where we're immediately at. It's completely quiet, right? So everybody's like, you know, head to the berm, get to the berm. So we kind of grab our packs, you know, sling our packs quick and punch out to this berm. There's a berm in front of us. And we start like just staggered column. We're like kind of hustling to get to this berm. And there's like, you can hear a running gunfight happening in the distance. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
But like,
yeah.
it wasn't like right on top of us. So we're like, they're that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we start head towards his berm, and I'll see this guy crawl up over the berm, and he's wearing a boonie cap, and okay. Sunglasses, a t-shirt. He's got a rifle slung across his back. He's got PT shorts on, like Daisy Duke, like okay. PT shorts. You know what I mean? Or silky as we call them. And his boots are untied and wide open, and he's like, "Yo, over here." And of course, everybody's like, you know, "Who is this guy? It's a trap." You know? And so he's like, "We're waving." He's waving us over. I'm like, "Who the heck is this?" So we come up over, and turns out he was a SEAL attached to the Mew. And he's like, "Yeah, dude, y'all missed. That's why we called you off, you know, because they're pushing through, you know." So that gunfire we heard was the guys retreating, and second LAR still running after him,
okay.
You know, and just trying to chase him down. And so I'm like, "Thank you, Lord."
Yeah.
You know? So we come over, and there, I mean, it's a buzz. It's a hub of activity. You come over. I mean, it's like a beehive, dude. There's like LAR, light armed reconnaissance are running everywhere. You got like units just taking off their gear and, you know, just hanging out.
Cause
like,
they were just in a battle. So
they're just like, they just pushed through. And so it wasn't a big fight there. And they tucked and ran, but I mean, it's still, I mean,
right,
yeah,
adrenaline's still, through the roof.
Yeah, absolutely.
No matter what. Yeah.
So we come over. And we start, you know, everybody's like, "Well, circle up, you know." So we make sure we got head counts and everything else. And you know, we're up and everybody's good to go. And we're like, "Well, what the heck?" You know, hour and a half later, 2 hours later, here comes the rest of our stick in. You know what I mean? So now we're just like, they're like, "Yeah, you can occupy that building." So, I mean, like,
okay.
Like they're like, we're just, you know, kind of funneling in. And we get this. That's when it hit me. I was like, dude, like I said, I grew up in the church. I grew up, you know, following Jesus and here I am, you know, in the Marine Corps, and I love the Marine Corps. It was great. But I was like, man, if I have enough guts to jump into a bird with no ammunition, go to what I'm told is a hot LZ, expect to have a gunfight, and hold the landing zone for an hour and a half at least before reinforcements show up, how dare I? And for a country really that has begun to turn its back on God, how dare I not live the rest of my life? If I survive this, how dare I not live the rest of my life for things that matter for eternity rather than just the temporal now? And so that's kind of been my turning point, you know, in ministry and life and everything else. You know, the way that Five Stones then began when I get back.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was kind of, yeah. So,
wow.
So the funny thing is we're sitting there, and, you know, another commanding officer of the Mew was there, and he's like, "Oh, you're telling me you guys flew in with no ammo?" And we're like, "Yes, sir." And he goes like, "Well, that was effing stupid." You know, so of course we're like, we just kind of laugh, and he's like, "Mark my words, you will not leave here without ammo." 2 days later, on trucks headed north through Ambush Alley with no ammo. I'm like, "What? What is this?" I'm like, "Welcome to the Marine Corps."
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
wow. Yeah. And I love the Star Wars reference, by the way. It's a trap.
It's a trap. Yeah, it's a trap. Yeah.
I'm a big Star Wars fan, my wife and I. Wow. Yeah, let's take a sip break.
Mm-hmm.
To pick up, I mean, that's your first fray. What was it like? Because you were in the Marine Corps for 6 years,
six years,
yeah, right, as an infantry machine gunner. So,
right.
You know, take us through
So that's what people think, like, you see all these war movies and it's not the way it works.
Or any of them? Would you say any of them?
Yeah,
cool?
I mean, some of them are close, obviously, but I mean,
like, what comes to mind? Black Hawk, Down,
I mean,
Lone Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, I have
a couple.
I mean, like Black Hawk, Down. I wasn't there for any of those. You know what I mean? But I could see, like, a good buddy of mine was actually there. One of our he's a Navy corpsman. He got out of the Army as a Ranger, joined the Navy Reserve because his buddy told him they never deploy anywhere, right? So he became a medic. He's a Navy corpsman, got attached to our unit, and then he gets deployed. Yeah, so he's like, "Are you kidding me?" Yeah, he had a Bronze Star. He was in the random Mogadishu Mile. Like, yeah, he was one of the Rangers in Somalia.
Oh wow! So,
yeah.
So that's when you say the mile. That is
that's the run out.
The run out.
Yeah.
From Black Hawk Down, from the crash site.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's funny, man. You meet all kinds of people. Small world. Like crazy. Very small world. Yeah. Wow. And he's a little guy. He's a little guy like me. You know, so him and I, we went hunting together a couple of times. Like, yeah. So, yeah.
Size matters not.
No. The heart, size is the heart, man. That's it.
That's it. That's it. So, yeah, take us through, you know, those 6 years. What did you learn? People you met? Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. You know, I mean, man, I mean, it was really, for us, I would say probably the biggest thing that we had that really affected us was there was a bridge. There were two bridges. We held two bridges. One was over the Euphrates and one was over the Saddam Canal. And so the idea was that way forces could keep pushing north to Baghdad. And that was kind of our thing, was take the bridges, hold the bridges. And so the one bridge over the Euphrates, we were there for, you know, I would say probably, I don't know, 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks. And then we shifted north over the Saddam Canal. And while we were there, we had moved. I had gone to visit. There's Chow Run, you know what I mean? And so, like, we're kind of like, I'm going to say like redhead stepchildren. Like, nobody knew what to do with us at this point because the majority of the fighting happened in that for us. So if you look back at the war, you could see the casualty rates, right? In the beginning, yeah, it was high. Right. And then it leveled off for about a year or two, mm-hmm, and then it spiked in like 2005. That's when the IEDs were, introduced and all that kind of stuff. We didn't deal with IEDs. We didn't. I mean, not that they weren't there, but we didn't deal with
not
like in what happened later. And so, I mean, when we were getting to Exfil, we had heard about, hey, you know, this place called Fallujah, you know, and we're like, I don't know where Fallujah is at. You know what I mean? Now everybody knows Fallujah.
I was going to say that was a...
Anbar province. Yeah. Yeah, it was two big gunfights. Yeah. I mean, two major battles there. One of my buddies was killed outside of there. So yeah, I mean, it was not good, but, one of my guys grew up in Shmokin, was killed. Yeah. He was rotating out March 20th. He was killed. He was, 2004. He was, literally it was 5 days prior to him coming home. They had rotated out, and the Marines had took over their position. He was an Army medic, and they had moved him back, and rockets came in, landed on his tent. So, yeah. So, but before that, I mean, you had some running gunfights with the Saddam Fedayeen, and, you know, and it never ended up as much. Like, it wasn't much, you know, I mean, and I say it wasn't much. People are like, oh, it's a gunfight. Like, yeah, it was a gunfight, but it wasn't like it wasn't like what you see in the movies. You know, it was, you know, muzzle flashes and then, oh yeah, there's a couple guys dead over there. So somebody shot him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
what I mean? Yeah, you know, yeah. So, a couple of our guys were up on a tower and, you know, with machine guns, and they killed a couple of insurgents coming down the street. It was like basically like driving deer. I mean, like, right, you know, we're clearing the houses, and they ran down the street right at them.
Fishing a barrel.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit. Yeah. And then, so, I mean, like there's odds and ends like that, you know, but for the most part, I would say the biggest one that stuck out to me was when we went to, there was a bridge and we were delivering food, and like, I wasn't even supposed to be there. And so I just was like, yeah, I'll go, you know. So, I mean, just war is like 99% sheer boredom and then 1% of like terror and fear.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and chaos, yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, you just wait for stuff to happen. You wait for stuff to happen. And then it happened and all of a sudden, you know what I mean?
Like,
yeah,
it's just, yeah, it's, yeah.
And then it's like, did you believe that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, did you volunteer or were you voluntold?
No, I volunteered, actually. Okay, yeah. I was okay. Like, man, I'm here. I might as well do something.
I heard that's
pretty
big of the service. You know, you don't volunteer, you're voluntold. You
right,
know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that happens a lot, too. But, so there was a checkpoint set up on one of the bridges, and there was three rows of concertina wire. This was before anything was really, it wasn't really, it was a real hasty checkpoint. And so we had got word that they were running ammo and guns in the bottoms of ambulances and stuff like that. So there was a mound. We had a guy who had like AT-4, and he was like stationed around the mound. And so, like, if you, like, for rocket, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so it was kind of crazy. But they end up lighting this van up, blows through a couple lines of concertina wire, but you don't stop. It just keeps coming. And so they light this van up. And after they clear the van, they find out it's a family. And so, yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad. Yeah, kids were killed. One of our staff NCOs took it really hard. He had a daughter that age of one of the girls. Now, I mean, like, yeah, he was doing compressions, and she's clearly dead, you know. And they're like, they had to pull him off. They're like, there's nothing you can do. You know, so that was, you know, that was one thing that sticks out in my mind.
Did you ever figure out why they weren't stopping?
Yeah, they said they thought the war was over.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you think about, like, you never experience darkness until you've been into a town where there's no electricity and there's no lights. Like, it's black as black can be. And so, I mean, especially like in amongst buildings and stuff, like it's dark. You know, I mean, we had MVGs and whatnot, but I mean, like you take, it's just like, man, it's really, really dark here.
Night vision goggles. Yeah. I never thought about that, but right. I mean, you're over there. I imagine news doesn't get around quickly. I mean, technology is not like it is here.
Right.
You know, wow. So they thought the war was over. They're just flying through. Yeah. And obviously, you don't know if it's explosive or what.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. We saw a rolling bomb.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. So, yes, that was wild. but the other one was there was a house. We did a raid on a house of the general who ordered the invasion of Kuwait back in 91. So, which is kind of cool because my dad fought in that war.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was like, hey, you got to go kick in the door, go pay the guy a visit that started war for my dad. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that was kind of a cool thing. But we drove out, and this place is like in the middle of like this big desert area. And not everything in Iraq is desert, by the way. But yeah.
Really?
Yeah, not everything. Okay. There's a lot, but not everything.
Not everything, yeah.
So we're in these trenches, and there's like a irrigation ditch that goes through. And so we're like working up on the house, and we roll up on the house, kick the door in. Guys are eating lunch, and they scatter like roaches, right? So, I mean, it's just like it's like butt stroking, you know, smashing me in the face with a front sight post. It goes down, yeah. You know, and it's just a brawl, right? So we get everybody zip tied, hoods on them, thank you. And so, you know, we're counting everything else. And, you know, this guy was headed to a room in the corner. And so I'm like, man, like you look in the room and it's full of like AK-47s, you know, frags.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy smokes. Like, you know, had he got in there, it could have been bad. And so one of the guys walks in, and so that was Hydra. I mean, like it was like a wrestling match in the middle. I mean, piles of bodies, yeah. just going to town, you know, getting the cuffs on him, you know,
because they're just eating lunch and all of a sudden, boom, yeah, you guys exactly, go flying yeah. in and, you yeah. know, fisticuff style.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. And so like they, like I said, it was just everywhere. And so as we're doing, you know, our final checks and everything, it was good to go. We're like, you know, I mean, obviously they're still clearing the house and stuff, cause it's two stories, and you know, we get the all clear. They start looking through, like they're looking in these bags, and this guy, one of our guys, I think it was Fox actually that did it, but Fox looks through the bag and looks in the bag and he sees a grenade roll with no pin. Or no, with no pin and no spoon. And he's like, he goes, I literally just went, just closed his eyes. He like thought it was done.
Yeah.
Didn't go off. He just let the bag go and walked out. He's like, hey, there's a problem here. So, you know, so, wow. Yeah.
So yeah. A little bit of luck there?
A lot of luck. Yeah. Just luck. Didn't go. Yeah. I don't think it was anything like, I don't think it was like a booby trap or anything.
That's
I don't
what
think
I was
going
to ask.
You know, yeah, I think it was just like, it was just a dud. Like it was just what it was,
wow.
You know? Yeah. So, but we had, I mean, a lot of our time that we spent a lot of time just blowing stuff up, like doing demolition. And, I mean, like the firefights and stuff, they're not like later in the war, they had like legit sustained firefights. You know, those guys were banging pretty hard. You know, our stuff was super fast, you know, a couple minutes, you know, people were either dead or they're on the run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the quality airstrikes, you know what I mean? Like it's not.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty wild.
That is, it is crazy. It's crazy to think about. So, you know, 6 years of being in the Marine Corps, you know, when you finally came home, got out, you know, what was that transition like for you, and what did you start doing after that?
Yeah, so when I was in the Marine Corps, I got married actually. When I got married, I was at Camp Lejeune. My wife took a job coaching basketball at the University of Richmond, so she was coaching at U of R because it was closer, and basically it was, you know, we could, on if I ever had leave or time off, I could go, you know, short distances. So when I came home, home wasn't Shamokin anymore. It was, you know, Richmond. While I was there, I began working with Henrico County Police Department. I was went to 36 Basic Academy with those guys, and that's what I did there. I did just patrol officer stuff. I mean, I got to. It was funny because, like, at that time there wasn't, like, this was like 2003 into 2004. So there were people returning, but there wasn't a lot of vets that had seen combat, you know, in the police department or anything like that. And so it's kind of funny to, you know, they're like, anybody ever been in a firefight? You know, and there's like three of us raise our hand, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. You know, so I'm like, that's a weird question. Why would you ask that? You know what I mean? But I mean, so it was just, I think they were just trying to gauge the room and see who, you know, what was going on. So then with that, like, I got to, like, there was a SWAT commander kind of took interest in me a little bit, you know? So like anytime we're doing scenario stuff or like simulation stuff, he'd be like, come with me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
what I mean? Right, yeah.
So like, all right, you know, so.
Yeah.
That usually ended up like we did boxing and stuff, and they'd be like, the guy I fought was like 6'2", 240.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really?
You know? Yeah, what is this?
So I'm like,
yeah.
All right, whatever. Yeah. And they just kind of laughed, and they're like, man, you can come with me anytime you want. I'm like, all right, sounds good. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. But and I had boxed, so I mean, like, I had some, you know, I mean, I didn't tell anybody that at the time. I was like, nice. All right, let's, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so I let the dude would just cover up, and I just, you know, heavy body shots, and then the arms would come down and be like,
boom.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so it fared well for me. I think he hit me like twice, but so that kind of built like rapport, and then you know, with the instructors and stuff. So I got to be real good friends with our class instructor, and he, like, obviously during the time he couldn't, like you would never, he would never admit that, like, he just, like,
yeah.
Like, I knew he
liked
me.
He couldn't let you know.
Yeah,
right.
I knew he liked, because I get away with all kinds of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, we had one point, so I was a class leader, and they're like, hey, you know, why are we formed up inside? And I'm like, sir, you said to get a formation going, so I, you know, and so I formed up inside. And I'm like, is there a problem? Like, and he's like, well, I just thought you'd be outside. And the reason we formed up inside, we had two guys that forgot their baseball caps, right? So you got to look the same. So in the Marine Corps, in the Marine Corps, you don't wear your cover unless you're armed.
Okay.
Inside, we weren't armed yet. So I had like everybody, like, I'm like, you forgot your cover. I'm like, how did you forget? So I'm like, let's go inside. Let's go inside. So we formed up inside. So I'm like, take your hats off, put it in a bag. So everybody, you know, does that.
That's
and
brilliant.
So yeah. So like, great. I'm scamming. I'm playing the game. You know what I mean? I'm gaming the game. And so he stands in front of me and he salutes, and you know, and you're not supposed to salute without a cover or anything like that. And I'm like, I'm like, sir, am I supposed to salute you? In the Marine Corps, we don't salute without a cover. And he's like, oh. And he's like, and he cuts a salute and he goes, where are their hats? And I'm like, sir, I played dumb with you. Sir, we're inside. And he goes, yeah, but it's part of the uniform. I'm like, yeah, but you're not supposed to wear a cover inside, sir. And he's like, oh, is that a Marine Corps thing? I'm like, yes, sir. And he goes, all right. Okay. So
definitely playing the game.
Yeah. So we go down through the morning inspection, everything else, and he's doing everything, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And at the end, everybody's like, yeah, it was good. I'm like, dude, we got lucky, bro. Bring your hat next time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, don't forget
so,
it. Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. No, but so it was, I mean, the police department was fun. Out of the academy, even FTO stuff, like, they're like, hey, you want to get in a pursuit? And I'm like, how does that work? Like, you just decide you're going to, how does that work?
Yeah, what do you mean get in a pursuit?
Yeah.
Like, chasing?
So, yeah, just in cars. And I'm like,
criminals,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, how do you just dial up a pursuit? Like, how does that work? You can't just.
That's what I mean.
And he's like, I got issues. I'm like, I got a way to do this. I'm like, all right. So we pulled down, we back into this lot. And there's trees, and it's right down. So there's Henrico County and Richmond City. And so they touch, and like, you can, and we, at the time, Henrico had the most liberal pursuit policy in the world, in the nation.
Okay.
And so we backed in, and he's like, just let me, I'll let you know. He goes, when I say pull out, he goes, don't pull out fast. Don't turn your lights on. Just creep out, you know, and we'll go from there. And so I'm like, all right. So we're waiting, and this ghetto sled comes rolling down the street, and he's like, that's the one. And I'm like, okay. So as soon as I start moving, and the policy was, if they ran, you could chase them.
Okay.
And so as soon, I mean, I barely touched the gas, and this thing, he lights his wheels up. I'm like, oh, and he's like, go, go, go. So like, it was just like, yeah. So we go chasing down through town. I have no idea. Like, I'm new. I don't know the roads. So I'm like, whoa. And he's like, go, I'll call it. So he's calling on radio, you know, and I'm flying through town, you know what I mean? You know, and finally the guy crashes, right?
Yeah,
so I slam on the brakes. I slam into the car. I'm like, oh, man. So he bails. So I jump out, and I'm chasing him down, running, and I'm catching him. He's running. He's looking back. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I can hear my guy on the radio, you know, and, you know, what road we're coming. He's behind me coming, you know, what street we're on, you know, 8th and Linden, you know, so 7th and Linden, you know, so we're running. And all of a sudden, I see a flash come out, and it's like, boom, guy tackled another police officer.
Yeah.
Right? Just, I mean, just drop, like, T-bones.
Like Ray
this
Lewis
guy.
Or something.
Yeah, dude,
you know,
it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a great
just
tackle.
Drops him.
And he tackles him. They come up in this roll. He's face down. He cuffs him. And it was like he was like a hog tie.
Yeah.
He stands up. He's like, woo.
What was
and
the time?
Yeah,
what's my time?
And he looks at me. He's like, that's the way you do it, Rook. And I'm like, Roger that.
That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. So yeah. I was like, holy smokes. So, yeah, I got in trouble because I wrecked the car. But But every time I wrecked the car, I say, this happened a couple times. every time I wrecked the car, I got a year newer one. So I was like, this is great. Because the SWAT commander was in charge of the motor pool.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So it was kind of
that worked
cool.
out. Yeah. 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 But wow, that's crazy. So, you know, as a police officer, then you also did like 8 years or so as a private security. And I don't know if that's in order, but... and what was it for? Some kind of nuclear security?
Yeah, so Exelon Nuclear Security, Mile Island Power Plant.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so what that was basically just site security. Not real exciting. The cool thing we got to do there was I got to be on their site adversary team. So, get real boring, you know, at night. Sitting on a post, you know, every 2 hours, you know, you're on a rotation, whether on a roof or a tower, you know, or in a patrol around the vehicles or whatever, you know. You know, it is what it is. But, 28 days in day shift, 28 days on night shift, you bounce back and forth, you know. Oof. Yeah, it was rough. Yeah. So, great job, paid well. You got to shoot, you know, they paid you to go shoot. So, I enjoyed it, right?
Yeah, kept you sharp.
Yeah, exactly. And then it could keep you sharp as long as you were training outside of the, like they had a gym on site. So, you don't have to pay to go to the gym. You just go to the gym before shift and go, you know. Yeah. Not a lot of guys used it, so a lot of guys are like, oh, that's the worst job. I'm like, worst job ever, man. Like, this is like, you're getting paid big money to go sit in 2 hour shifts, look for bad guys. I mean, praise the Lord, you ain't find any,
right? Exactly.
You know, trying to commit radiological sabotage, or you're like, come on, man. So, with the adversary team, you got to pretend that you use Miles gear, military integrated laser engagement system. So, it's basically a big thing of laser tag. So, it's great. So, everything's one-to-one, very similar to this. You'd have your magazines of fire blanks, which would the gas then would trigger the laser out the front of the weapon, and you had sensors on your gear. So, if you were a good guy or a bad guy, it would beep if you were hit or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or would zing if you're it was near miss, or vibrate if it was near miss.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So, it was pretty cool.
That was pretty neat.
So, so we got to do that kind of stuff, and that was fun. You know, that was the highlight of what we did. You know, so we did that for 7 or 8 years, and that actually through that time. Let me back up. So Five Stone started. My wife says I get rammy if I don't have something to do, which is very true.
I could probably see that.
Yeah. It's very true.
Stay tuned for part two next week. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop, veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.